down here and present to you some information. I handed out a PowerPoint that will be presented on the screen at your desks. I'm joined today by members of our staff seated behind me. Over the last 2 months, we've been working on an issue that we wanted to bring forth today. Also joined by three colleagues from DNREC, Drainage Program, and they have oversight on tax ditches, which will be part of today's conversation. Let me bring the presentation up. All right, so I wanted to provide some information and background to council about topics that we've been discussing internally, and today's conversation is two-pronged. One is to give you information and update on the efforts that staff has taken, and also introduce some recommendations that we're not prepared to put in place today, but we are discussing, and those recommendations will be brought forth at a future date. Normally, this would be done administratively, but this is a topic that I felt compelled to do today during a council meeting, make you fully aware and make you aware before things actually happen, which is always prudent when dealing with these types of topics. So let's jump into today's conversation. Why are we here? Well, there's been recent issues related to property setbacks or tax ditch right-of-ways, the measurements that take place between the setbacks and also within the tax ditch right-of-way. Our county staff have identified gaps in our system. I've been approached by members of our Board of Adjustment, some of which have talked to you all, requesting that we have increased staff scrutiny. And I also referenced our friends at the Denrec Drainage Program. They contacted the county seeking better coordination between Denrec and the county. We met with them several weeks ago to talk about this topic. Here are the issues that I'm referencing. When a person pulls a building permit, that person that's actually requesting or applying for the permit perhaps is not doing the actual construction on site. The property owner will tell the builder where to place the structure on their property. A drawing, site plan, survey, as-built, is not required when a building permit is applied for. Setback measurements are done at the end of the inspection process. That's probably one of the low-hanging fruits that we hope to address. Property lines are not easily identifiable. Think about some properties that you may be familiar with that the property lines just clearly cannot be ascertained on site. And of course, tax ditch right-of-way is unknown to the property owner or the builder, another big issue that we have experienced. So I want to walk you through the process. I know you're familiar with this, but it makes our presentation more thorough as it relates to the issues and then the recommendations. So for those of folks that actually come in and request a building permit, you'd be surprised to know that there are some folks that do construction without a building permit that don't come in and apply. But those constituents that actually do apply for a building permit, usually they come into this building in person. Staff on site at the building permit counter reviews the information, including the property zoning, the proposed structure, the size and dimensions, and any restrictions on the property, like a tax ditch right-of-way. This information is done at the permit counter you're familiar with. The information that they're reviewing is right there at the computer, and they're usually dealing with the person that is applying for it right in front of them. They process the building permit, and on that permit, there are setback restrictions that are specifically listed within the permit. I'll show you those in a minute. The applicant signs the application, initials the setback section of the building permit. They're approved and they move on and free to construct whatever improvement they're trying to put on their parcel. If the property is located on a tax ditch, that permit copy is also sent to Denrec each week. So if we get a number of permits that week, they're mailed over or sent over to Denrec for their information. This is an actual building permit. I redacted the information because this is just an example. There's not necessarily anything wrong with this permit. I didn't want anyone to see this presentation and be misunderstood. I wanted to highlight what I just referenced in the red box you can see up on the permit. Clearly, the measurements from property lines are listed right on the permit. So this permit is taken out of this building and with the constituent, and they have a copy of this along with the little permit that they put in their window showing that they're approved for this construction. And the measurement from setback is clearly written right on the permit. The red circle shows the initials of the constituent, verifying that they understand that there are restrictions involving where the placement of this structure can be. The process for properties that are on a tax ditch, the process is identical, except for a few things. You go through the same steps, you come here, you get your information reviewed by county staff, staff processes it in place, and then a building permit is issued. On that permit, there is a tax ditch notification. I'll show you an example in a minute. And then you are able to leave the building and start your work. As I said before, DENREC does receive a copy of the building permit that is identified as a property on a tax ditch. Here's the information. Again, another actual permit. You can see on the circle that there is notification within the permit that the construction on this property may be subject to setback requirements from the tax ditch right-of-ways. So the information is there. What do the people do with it when they go out on site is a different scenario. And the problem that we've identified in our steps of inspection is the fact that construction is taking place before a county employee is putting their eyes on the site to make sure that they're in compliance. This is a historic legacy issue involving our inspection process that we're hoping to address. Let's talk about the inspection process. Now, the inspection process in Sussex County is very complicated. Our staff do a wonderful job and they are very busy every day going out and making sure that people comply with the county code. I wanted to boil it down just for this conversation. So you can see in paren, this is the building process in general. There are some nuances, but for today's conversation, this is what we wanted to focus on. On the left-hand column, we're dealing with small structures. Those are structures that are under 400 square feet, less than 30 inches tall. That's usually what we're talking about, tall in decks. 30 inches off of the ground. Mostly decks, and then agricultural structures. Any ag structure that is non-commercial, so it's a pole building, think of a pole building, a chicken house, a manure shed, those types of structures are not within our building code inspection process. They're not inspected for building code structural type inspections. They are inspected for setbacks at the end, and I'll walk you through this. So, these types of structures on the left, you get your permit, you're allowed to go out and construct. No building code inspection is triggered, so no building code inspector will show up and do what normally is the first inspection, a footer inspection. The structure is put in place or it's built. Think of a structure like a shed, a small shed. It's placed on the lot, and once it's put in place, usually by a shed salesperson in a truck and a rollback, once it's put in place, it's not easily adjusted. Or you can think of a pole building or a manure shed, very large structure. Once it's put in place, definitely not easy to move. At the end of that whole process, the county comes out and closes out that permit by doing a setback inspection. That inspection is simply to measure the distance between the structure and the property lines. You can think of the many problems that could occur once the structure's in place and those measurements take place afterwards. That's one of our recommendations that you'll see in a minute. If all of that is approved, we approve this, the C of O, and they close out the permit and people move on. If it's not approved, of course, then you have to go into the variance process seeking approval. One of the reasons the Board of Adjustment contacted us is because they were seeing variances requesting a waiver from the setback restrictions. All right, let's move to the right-hand side. Structures that are larger of size and scope. Our threshold is 400 square feet. So anything over 400 square feet or greater than 30 inches from the ground, again, talking about decks. Same process, but what happens is in step two, a building code inspector will go out and start to inspect these types of structures with a footer inspection. So we're out there generally at the beginning of the process, and as you'll see, we will recommend that we start making those setback inspection measurements at this stage instead of at the stage where the structures are already completely built. The first inspection I referenced in number three is the footer, which I just spoke about. There are additional building code inspections that take place related to the building code that they are enforcing. That's irrelevant to today's conversation. In the end, our inspectors come in and do that setback inspection. Again, the structure is fully built. Problematic if it's built within a setback restriction or a right-of-way. If it's not meeting that setback restriction, they come to planning zoning, seek a variance, $400, 6 months, and then if they're approved by the county council or the planning zone, the board of adjustment, then the structure is allowed to remain in place. If you're familiar with a few cases that have recently been in front of the board, that has been problematic. One of the reasons board of adjustment has asked the county council to take a look at this. All right, I'm going to take a bit of a time to talk about tax ditches, because some of this involves tax ditches. And the reason why I'm talking setbacks and tax ditch right away, because the issue we're seeing is whether it's a setback or a tax ditch right away, structures are being placed in violation of those two measurements. But tax ditches have gotten a lot of attention here recently. There's been several meetings related to the uses of tax ditch, the drainage there of tax ditch, how important tax ditches are in Sussex County in particular because of the wet season that we've experienced recently. I'll run through this quickly. Tax ditches were created back in 1951 as a result of the Delaware Drainage Law. Very important. Not all ditches in Sussex County or the state are tax ditches. When we refer to a tax ditch, we're actually talking about the tax ditch organization that's been formed to maintain that structure. This organization is a watershed organization formed by a prescribed legal process in Delaware Superior Court. A tax ditch organization is formed with the mission and intent to maintain these tax ditches. So funding is collected, those funds are used to maintain the ditch, whether it be cleaning the ditch or cutting the grass. Each ditch has a right-of-way recorded. Those right-of-ways are recorded in the property on the deeds. In the state of Delaware, there are 234 individual tax ditch organizations that consist of over 2,000 miles of tax ditch. That's 378,000 acres, 30% of the state. The benefit of that is 47,000 properties are drained directly or indirectly by these tax ditches. And last year, over $350,000 were collected by the tax ditch organizations. Let's talk about Sussex in particular. On the right-hand side, you can see the blue districts. Those blue districts highlight the individual tax ditch organization, so I referenced that earlier. And then within those organizations, the drainage ditch is within that area, and it's also the watershed that is drained by those tax ditch organizations. In Sussex alone, there's 137 of these organizations representing 1,214 miles of tax ditch. That covers 232,000 acres, or 38% of our landmass for the county. You can see practically nearly half of the western side of the county on the western side is drained by these tax ditches or benefit from the drainage of those tax ditches. 31,000 properties represented here by the tax ditch watersheds. Pretty important. So if you look at our county map on our website, and you go on to the category that shows the tax ditches. This is a screenshot of a tax ditch. This is the Tyndall Branch tax ditch. What's important here is what I'm trying to illustrate. The blue line in the center is representing the tax ditch in the water feature. And then the rectangular boxes around these represent the right-of-way. And you can see in small writing, this one right here on this, it's called the Jobs Main. This, where I'm indicating, is 116 feet CL. CL standing for center line of the ditch. That's the right-of-way, 116 feet. And there are other indicators down here at the bottom. This is 80 feet TOB. top of bank. So where the right-of-way is positioned in the measurement by which you have to have these restrictions are right here on the county's website. This is the information that our staff reviews when a person comes in to seek a building permit and see that there is a right-of-way on this property. This is the same exact ditch with a different base map showing the farmland underneath the Google Earth shot. All right. Let me illustrate some issues that we have experienced recently or not so recently. Every picture that I'm about to show you is a tax ditch. The tax ditch has a right-of-way, and there's a structure within the right-of-way. So this one is, you can see on the bottom, Gum Branch Pocomoke Tax Ditch, which has 120-foot top-of-bank right-of-way. Ditch, obviously, in the middle of the picture. On the right-hand side, you can see improvements that have been placed very close to the ditch, clearly within the 120-foot right-of-way. The right-of-way is important because when a tax ditch manager wants to come in and mow or dip out the ditch or put the spoils from the dip out, they want that area to be used to access the ditch and to access that activity. Otherwise, the ditch can't be maintained. This picture illustrates that they are still able to mow the ditch and get in there. Another example, B Branch Nanticoke River Tax Ditch has a 45-foot center line of ditch right-of-way. You can see the structure within 10 feet of that tax ditch placed there. This is interesting. This is the Middle Ford tax ditch. On the left side, the white vinyl fence has an 80-foot right-of-way. On the right side, the right arrow trying to show a 25-foot top-of-bank right-of-way. The close-up picture on the right-hand side shows the edges of the fence line and the ditch in the middle. The ditch has not been maintained or cut, and you can see that the wooden fence on the right side is practically at the top of the ditch's bank. This is interesting, and yesterday when we were reviewing this one with staff, this shows a couple of things. So this is the Cart Branch Nanticoke River Tax Ditch, 80-foot right-of-way for this ditch. You can see the ditch here, right in the middle. You can tell that the ditch has been maintained by mowing. And if you can look very closely, you can see tire tread right here, especially in the stones. By the way, this is a full-fledged cell tower facility with the normal cell tower infrastructure at the bottom, and you can see the edge of a pole right here at the edge of the picture. But the mowing that's taking place on this tax ditch is actually able to happen. They're able to squeeze in between the fence and the ditch. You can tell by looking at what appears to be tractor tread of a recent effort to clean that ditch. And lastly, probably our favorite picture, Beaver Dam Canal tax ditch, 80-foot top of bank right away. Big tax ditch on the right-hand side, not being maintained. You can see trees and grass being grown in there. However, it does have a right-of-way. The right-of-way is 80 feet. This pole building was recently constructed within that tax ditch right-of-way with the property owner's awareness that there was a right-of-way. And a lot of times people will purchase their property or come in and get a permit, not know that there's a right-of-way restriction, and be very, very surprised, very, very shocked, very, very upset that they may not be able to do what they were hoping to do. And again, these are law-abiding citizens coming in to getting a building permit. Again, not everyone gets a building permit when they're constructing structures on their property. But this one was placed within the 80-foot top-of-bank right-of-way. In violation of the right-of-way restrictions. Now, our friends at DENREC do have the ability to adjust the right-of-way. It does take quite a bit of time, a couple months, and there is a process because you are involving the Superior Court. There's a process called a change order, a court order change, as well as getting the tax ditch managers of that particular ditch feature to agree to a reduction in the right-of-way. They still like to keep a minimum distance of that right-of-way, 40, 50 feet, which is generally what you can use to access the ditch if you ever were to dip the ditch. Dipping the ditch meaning cleaning the ditch out and taking some of the top-end soils out of the ditch so it drains. That does take time and effort, but there is relief if we are aware of someone trying to build within the right-of-way. Doesn't always work, because if they're trying to build within 40 or 50 feet, you're not able, even with a reduction, to put that structure in place. This is my last slide, and if you have questions, we can ask our friends from DENREC to explain that in more detail. So here are our recommendations thus far. And again, I'm explaining this to you today. Nothing's going to take effect today. We feel as though we're at a point where we can make some recommendations to you all. At some point in the future, we're going to need to adjust the staffing, training, making sure that our computer system that they use on site, our Munis system, has the right capabilities to start these new inspections in particular. But today, it's an opportunity for us to get guidance from you and feedback. So number one, when someone's here applying for a setback and there is a tax ditch right away, we need to explain to the applicant when they're here in person what's taking place in our the county's expectations of following either the setback restrictions or the tax ditch right away restrictions. We're going to develop a new form with the help of our county attorneys that shows that they understand there are restrictions and that they have knowledge of that before they leave the building. You have to remember, the folks that come in and pull a building permit are not always the ones doing the construction on site. They could simply be a person like we like to call the runner that comes in and gets the building permit and hands that off to the construction manager. Sometimes the construction manager isn't the one doing the construction. They have teams that go out and build pole buildings, for example. So there's a lack of coordination from permit counter to parcel that we'd like to improve. We want to coordinate better with DENREC. Right now, we're giving the notification of the building permits weekly, basically sending over a pile at the end of the week. We want to do that daily and make sure that they're aware of the fact that someone is asking to build on a piece of property that's located on a tax ditch. I understand that the office at DNRAC does not have the ability to send staff out to do site inspections, but we do. And that coordination between the county and DENREC is critical to make sure that folks comply. Speaking of the inspection process, as I told you before, we need to put eyes on the parcel and the project before things happen. So we need to get out at the beginning, whether that means at a footer inspection for those larger structures over 400 square feet or greater than 30 inches, or even for the structures we normally would not inspect for building code purposes, including agriculture. So that would include chicken houses, manure sheds, pole buildings in an agriculture setting. We want to go out to the parcel, see where they propose to build the parcel, pull the tape, make sure it's within the setback restrictions, and then if everything adds up, you're free to go. But we want to do that process before things happen and construction and expense takes place, which is much harder to correct. If we're on site and an inspection fails, in other words, they are building within a setback or right of way, as would happen today, if your footer inspection fails, you get your construction halts until that can be fixed. We would do the same with a setback. And we would ask for corrective measures. If those corrective measures aren't able to take place, then we would not allow you to move forward. If those corrective measures are able to take place and we're satisfied that you're now outside the setback requirements, then we would obviously allow you to move forward. Let me give you a little bit of the mindset between this process and what staff has recommended. Nearly 90% of the applications that come in today are compliant. They know the setback rules, they build the structure well within the setback rules, and they're fine. So we didn't want to hold those people up. Come in, get a permit, we meet you, we inspect, you move forward. It's the 10% that perhaps aren't aware or not willing to fulfill or follow the setback restrictions that we want to catch in the beginning before the structure is built. And then no one wants to pay the expense to move the structure. And I don't think the county wants to get in the business of asking the structure to be taken down and removed. And again, we're here because our Board of Adjustment has asked us to front-end the inspection process instead of trying to have folks take advantage of the county's goodwill where we have allowed variances to happen over time. All right. I'll pause there. I know there's questions. If there are questions about tax ditch information, we do have our friends here that can address those as well, Mr. President.
Question to council? Mr. Burton.
I got. I saw on the that you had a stamp that the tax ditch was part of this property.
Mm-hmm.
Does the guy leave there with a, here's the map? I mean, if I was unaware of it and you gave me a stamp, you haven't told me anything.
Mm-hmm.
But do you hand me a map? Like that right there, if I was unaware, I wouldn't know what to do.
Yeah.
And they're different, right? Some are 50, mm-hmm. some are 120.
So the answer in my understanding, and I'll ask staff to step up if there's a different understanding, the answer is yes and no. If we have a unique set of circumstances, yes, we will print out the parcel. And I just saw one yesterday from our permit counter where the parcel is given to the applicant, and there's four corners, if you can envision the parcel, and at each one of the four sides of the parcel, there's a number that we hand to them, 25, 40, 15, and 15. So they know front, rear, side, and side are, as I've described to you and given to you. That's not done 100% of the time. It's done when you have unique circumstances or, quite frankly, the applicant needs more information because they're not quite sure what the restrictions are. We've talked about that, so it might be a good bit of
that
information.
If I own that piece of property and you showed me that I had an 80-foot tax stick mm-hmm. ditch deal, well, show me,
mm-hmm.
right? And then I know what you're talking about because it's 80 feet my entire lot, or maybe it's 120 up to a certain point. It goes to 80. You know, I just think giving somebody a map
mm-hmm.
says, hey, this is what we're talking about,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to sending them to Denver.
Good question. Good recommendation. Did I cover that? No one's jumping up to say.
You did a good job, apparently.
So that's, I just think if it's lack of knowledge, then give them the map.
Good point.
Right? And then how much of this is Lowe's and Home Depot and that, I mean, because I don't know that I would contact you for shit. I just buy one and tell them to deliver it, right? I mean, is that your real problem, the Lowe's guy, or is it the big pole barn?
So you're referencing those vendors as in they sell the shed shows up one day on a rollback, and the shed gets placed. And I wouldn't call out those vendors. There are shed builders and suppliers also that do the exact same thing when we're only talking about sheds. And the answer is, just as I described the permit process, the person selling the shed and the person delivering the shed are completely different. And the folks that are coming in to do the shed placement may or may not be aware of the restrictions, may or may not care to follow the restrictions. The shed gets placed, the rollback is gone, and the shed is very, you know, bigger sheds, difficult to move at that point. Those are the ones, again, if we have a permit, they've come to get a permit, hopefully we can catch in the beginning. If they haven't come to get a permit, we're completely unaware. We have no idea what activity is taking place. And that could be the same for sheds, fences, decks, you name it. If they haven't pulled a permit, then we're unaware of the activity.
Good.
Yeah, that's all I got.
Okay.
There was an effort, Mr. Burton, in years past. We sent a letter to vendors to say, please be aware, if you're in the business of sheds and fences and such, please contact the county because a permit is required for those types of improvements. In a hope to make sure that they're aware that those sheds can't just be put right in the corner. There's got to be some setback.
How long ago have we done that?
A couple years ago.
Okay. Any more questions to council?
I've been manager.
Whoops, you have a question?
I've been a manager for Lord knows how long on a tax ditch. But if anybody wants to take my place, they can have it because it's free gratis. So anyway, I got a general idea of what you're talking about here.
Okay, good.
What's going on? We do have sometime buildings come over on our line. Of course, Mrs. Hitchens is going to keep me straight. That's who you might send them to, see Mrs. Hitchens. See, when it comes to tax ditches, when you look at a ditch, if it says anything about tax ditch, send them to see her. She'll tell them what they should build or not build.
That's one of our goals in this, is to improve our coordination with DENREC to make sure that Massey Dendrick Soil Conservation Drainage Program, who has oversight in Sussex County on this issue.
More questions, the council?
I have one.
Mr. Hudson?
Who comes up with the formula or whatever it is that you use for setbacks? You see some that are 116 feet, you see some that are 50, you see some 80, 75. How does that get determined?
So setbacks here, property setbacks, are spelled out in the code.
Correct.
Varies by zoning, AR versus another type of zoning. And it's, you know, we have a matrix that says...
I was just talking about tax ditch.
On tax ditches, historically... That would, come forward. Will you introduce yourself?
Tax ditch ordinance, the money from Michelle Barner.
Let me introduce you to the council and welcome you to the podium. Will you introduce yourself?
Hi, my name's Michelle Garner. I work for the Department of Natural Resources, the Drainage Program for short, tax ditches for even shorter, for the last 34 years. Tax ditches, when they were formed, whether it was in 1951 or the last one, I believe, was in 2013. When they're formed, their rights of way are developed. Some of those rights of way, up until legislation in 2008, were up to 250 feet, some greater, depending on the tax ditch. Legislatively, a lot of them were reduced, as you see in the handout that I gave you, in 2008, based on the bottom width of the ditch, so that you didn't have 250 feet on one side, 250, 500 feet of your property, you know, not buildable. That legislation reduced about 60% or so of tax ditch rights of way to kind of update and give more. They can still be reduced, possibly, on a case-by-case basis before and after that legislation. But when the tax ditch is formed, the tax court-appointed tax ditch commissioners review the application for the request to form a tax ditch. They investigate with the assistance of our agency and the conservation districts and determine what would be a good right-of-way in order to spread the amount of spoil. Sometimes it's a new ditch being dug or it's an old ditch that's been there since the land began. I mean, organized drainage has been in Delaware since the 1700s, but the Delaware tax ditch law that we currently operate has been since 1951. So some of the rights of way, like you said, were maybe could be 16 and a half feet, or they could be 80 or 120. That's going to be based on the formation documents and that legislation, and if there was a court order change document done and approved by our office to reduce that right of way to whatever it may be. So you'll see some where they'll go and then it'll drop down and then it'll go back up because somebody applied to have it reduced, and if that's the only parcel, we'll reduce. Now, when it comes to larger developments and land use changes, then we have a process that we review when the conservation district does their stormwater, sediment and stormwater plans, and if it's in a new development, it's going to be in a tax ditch and it's going to affect rights of way or outfall into the tax ditch, then we work with the engineering firm and the conservation district and the officers on how to manage the ditch as well as reduce the rights of way so that the property can be developed.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. More questions,
I just want to clear my own mind that this only applies to tax ditches. This does not apply to non-tax ditches.
That's correct. There is no
governing authority.
Not that I'm aware of. There is no right-of-way easements that apply to non-tax ditches.
That's true.
And do we have issues with drainage coming from non-tax ditches that are, it's not draining because we have ingrowth and so forth and resulting flooding?
Anecdotally, I would say absolutely.
So is that something the council should be looking at?
Those ditches are owned by the property owner.
Right.
And not part of this overall tax ditch system or the conversation we're referencing today.
Yeah, oftentimes if the landowners have an issue with land not draining, they can have a tax ditch formed for purposes of clearing it out, and then whoever's land drains into that would be part of they would be taxed. It would be added to their tax bill to pay for the maintenance of that in the future.
And who initiates the formation of a new tax ditch?
In the past, it's traditionally been landowners that would come and state that, you know, our land is flooding and we want drainage. Oftentimes, it was the traditionally in Sussex, the farmers that would do that.
So they would go direct, they would go to the state, not to us?
That's correct, not to us.
Yeah, so that whole portion of this really doesn't...
Doesn't apply to us.
Not, yeah.
Correct.
Okay. And you said if they were not in compliance, that we would not permit them to move forward. What if they move forward anyway? I mean, what teeth are there there?
Well, we'll be, if they move forward and we're on site and they move forward, we can issue a violation, and then that starts a violation process. Eventually, if we get to the point of seeking a court injunction, because we know they're in violation, and that becomes a legal avenue. But the key is to, then all parties are on notice. So the county's aware, the construction side of it is aware, and if you proceed, you're doing so in your own, with trouble in the future, perhaps, and with full notice. So buyer beware. And hopefully there could be something that could be worked out. That's why we want to see these stakes in the ground, and we can measure and say this is where we're going. Now, one of the other issues that we have is you say it's going to go where the stakes are at the setback inspection, the first one. You build it, we come back, and then we close out the permit, and lo and behold, it's not built where the setback stakes were. We're trying to avoid the expense and time of requiring a survey, an as-built, construction drawings. I don't think council wants to do that, and I've been given clear instruction that we're going to try to do this in a very
common sense way.
Common sense, easy approach. See if it improves matters. But as I said before, if people continue to take advantage of our goodwill, then we may have to put other steps in place.
So, in a nutshell, our primary role in this process is to make sure that the right-of-way is not being encroached upon.
Correct.
And we believe that, you know, the preliminary inspection will address that problem.
That's our hope. In months of conversation with these staff here, that's the low-hanging fruit. Mm-hmm. Short of us saying at the counter, I want to build a pole shed, here's my survey, which may cost thousands of dollars. Here's my as-built, which may cost thousands of dollars. Mm-hmm. Short of doing that, this is the best step that we think that we can engage in. And it's going to take an adjustment. We're going to have to see if we can keep up with the added inspections that are going to be required. But that's on us, not on the property owner, which is the way we want to try to effectuate this change.
So we do this first, see if it works. If it doesn't, we'll cross that bridge when we get there.
You got it. I'll be back in front of you saying, it didn't work. We tried the easy route. That didn't work. We got to make other changes.
Most of them are homes, not pole buildings, because most time farmers know where to blow them.
Correct statement. All right, thank you very much.
How about town permits? How about we don't have enough to do town permits, that, right?
That's yep. Correct.
Well, I went here on Meadowland and found that they built a house within 5 foot of the ditch. The guy called me and wanted to know what the problem, what we can do, how to get this ditch cleaned up. I said, I don't know how you clean it out. You built a diagonal house on the ditch. Within, it's less than 5 foot. I couldn't hardly walk around.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. Thanks, staff. Thank Denrek and Soil Conservation. And hopefully we'll improve our system. That'd be a good thing.
Mr. Lawson, can I address one more thing?
You come right on down, young lady. Yes, you can. Yes, you can.
There's a lot that happened with the legislation in 2006 and 2008 that really rocked the tax ditch world. I attended almost all but two of those legislative task force meetings. The legislation grandfathered in existing structures as legal non-conforming use. So if your house was built too close to the ditch, it was grandfathered in as a legal non-conforming use if it was built or permitted to be built prior to July 17th of 2008. But legal non-conforming use, the definition that I was provided with the task force was that if it goes away, fire, flood, or tornado, whatever, and the structures no or trailer being replaced, and it does not necessarily go back in its current footprint. It may,
It may not. If it's 10 feet from the ditch and got grandfathered in, it's probably not going to be permitted to go 10 feet close to the ditch again, because equipment cannot get in there to maintain it. It has to be done by hand, which is very expensive. Some of the slides that we provided that Mr. Lawson showed like a fence or a building and nothing on the other side. In those particular cases, there was no court-ordered rights-of-way on the side that had the clear field, the side that had the fence, for instance. That was the side that was the maintenance side. The tax ditch organization does not have the right to hire a contractor to go on the other side unless that landowner agrees to allow them to do that, and in all likelihood, they're not going to, unless they're a farmer and they need the ditch cleaned to help them out. So I just wanted to clarify a few of those points, that just because of with the permitting, they might have gotten a permit before, their shed's deteriorating and they want to replace it, it would still be going through the new, we would hope, going through the new steps of how they get a permit.
Sure. Yeah. Thank you very much.
The most important part of that legislation was the first time that there was a organized effort statewide to record all the tax ditch right-of-ways. You could go do a title search and there would be a tax ditch on your property. You would not see oftentimes where they were, because there were not indices. I know in Sussex County there were not indices that would show what that tax ditch right-of-way was and the distance. So this gave us the ability to see, and they recorded them all in mass, showing here's all the tax ditches in the county and what the right-of-ways were at the time.
Yes, they are recorded in the recorder deeds office, not specifically on a deed, but they are findable by a title searcher doing due diligence. And in fact, some of the reasons this was done was because innocent landowners buying property and building next to tax ditches tried to go back against their title insurance, the real estate company, their attorney that was settling. And part of this task force discussed this and put these measures in with the grandfathering and to move forward. But the landowners, there have been a few cases that I've heard of since the legislation change where people did go back against their title insurance because they bought a lot. Then they get told they can't put their house in the desired location because it's going to be too close, not even 80 feet from the ditch, but they wanted it closer to that pretty little stream that they don't realize might flood when we get heavy rains. And they went back against their title insurance, and some of them did get a payout. So, I mean, it's working. It's just a lot. And as you saw, 137 out of the 234, lower, slower.
Yeah. Thank you very much. Thank all of you very much. Mr. Lawson, your report.
Thank you. Yes, sir. Report for April 9th, 2019. Item number one, the Advisory Committee on Aging and Adults with Physical Disabilities Conference Planning Subcommittee will meet on Monday, April 15th at 10 a.m. at the Sussex County Admin Offices West Complex at 22215 North DuPont Boulevard in Georgetown. Subcommittee will continue to discuss planning for the upcoming conference on May 9th at Crossroad Community Church. A copy of the agenda is attached. Item two. On Friday, April 12th, the county will be initiating a computer software upgrade at 3 p.m., which will go through the weekend. During this time, county permitting and payment processing will be unavailable. The county's website that accesses these systems will also be unavailable. All systems are expected to be back up and available by Monday, April 15th. We ask that patrons plan accordingly. Item 3. Last week, Sussex County was notified that Delaware Governor John C. Carney has certified the Sussex County Comprehensive Land Use Plan effective March 19, 2019, marking the official end to a more than two-year process to rewrite and review the county's comp plan. In his April 1st letter, Governor Carney said his approval follows a recommendation from the Cabinet Committee on State Planning Issues, and he thanked the county for its work with state officials throughout the process. A copy of the governor's letter is attached. And finally, per the attached Engineering Department fact sheet, Tidewater Landing Phase 5A received substantial completion effective April 2nd. Thank you, Mr. President.
I do have one question.
Yes, sir.
I was looking at this letter, but I see apparently somebody opened my mail, apparently.
Did that go to the Planning Zoning Office?
I don't know. It was not addressed to them.
It came to the Planning Office.
The letter is addressed to who?
It is addressed to you, but it came to the Planning and Zoning Office.
Thank you. Metal Arts.
Good morning, Mr. President. Good morning, council members.
Good morning, sir.
We have two items.